Good morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Jerry Klein. Thanks for joining us today. Monsignor Charles Mangan also joins us to talk about the unbelievably long list of those on the path to canonization that have ties to the United States. A fascinating conversation with him. I hope you will stick around for it this morning. Renee Kranz will have news for us in just a bit. First, the readings for this Sunday. Michelle Sletton with the first and second reading. Deacon Roger Height with the gospel.
A reading from the book of the prophet Jeremiah. In those days, the princes said to the king, Jeremiah ought to be put to death. He is demoralizing the soldiers who are left in this city, and all the people, by speaking such things to them. He is not interested in the welfare of our people, but in their ruin. King Zedekiah answered, He is in your power. For the king could do nothing with them. And so they took Jeremiah and threw him into the cistern of Prince Malchiah, which was in the quarters of the guard, letting him down with ropes. There was no water in the cistern, only mud, and Jeremiah sank into the mud. Ebed-Melech, a court official, went there from the palace and said to him, My lord king, these men have been at fault in all they have done to the prophet Jeremiah, casting him into the cistern. He will die of famine on the spot, for there is no more food in the city. Then the king ordered Ebed-Melech the Cushite to take three men along with him and drew the prophet Jeremiah out of the cistern before he should die. The word of the Lord. A reading from the letter to the Hebrews. Brothers and sisters, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us rid ourselves of every burden and sin that clings to us, and persevere in running the race that lies before us, while keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus, the leader and perfecter of the faith. For the sake of the joy that lay before him, he endured the cross, despising its shame, and has taken his seat at the right of the throne of God. Consider how he endured such opposition from sinners, in order that you may not grow weary and lose heart. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood. The word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Jesus said to his disciples, I have come to set the earth on fire, and how I wish it were already blazing. There is a baptism with which I must be baptized, and how great is my anguish until it is accomplished. Do you think that I have come to establish peace on the earth? No, I tell you, but rather division. From now on, a household of five will be divided, three against two and two against three. A father will be divided against his son, and a son against his father, a mother against her daughter, and a daughter against her mother, a mother-in-law against her daughter-in-law, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with a look at news highlights from this past week from the Bishop's Bulletin, here's Renee Kranz.
The event previously known as Legacy, a Tasting Experience, has undergone some exciting changes this year, starting with a new name, Taste the Goodness. The event will be held at a new location, outdoors at the Avera Tech Building on 11th Street in downtown Sioux Falls. Running from 5 to 9 p.m., you'll experience a wide array of tasting options, including food, non-alcoholic and alcoholic beverages, games, activities, and much more. As in past years, you can also take part in the mobile bidding silent auction. The band Good Road will provide music for the evening. All proceeds will benefit the Bishop Dudley Hospitality House, which offers daytime and overnight emergency shelter for the homeless and vulnerable. History was made when close to 400 Franciscan friars from 25 states, as well as Canada, Italy, Jamaica, Mexico, and the Philippines, gathered recently in unity and fraternity in Denver for the Religious Order's Chapter of Mass. The meeting was one phase of a process by the Franciscans of the Order of Friars Minor to form a new province out of six of the religious order's provinces. Revitalization of Franciscan life and ministry in America is the goal of this multi-year process of restructuring that began in 2012 with discussions by the friars of the six provinces. A federal appeals court said a Pennsylvania county can keep the image of a cross on its official seal because it was not an endorsement of religion. The unanimous August 8th ruling by the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Philadelphia followed a precedent set by the U.S. Supreme Court earlier this year when it allowed a historic cross-shaped memorial in Maryland to remain standing, saying it did not endorse religion. The ruling also overturns a 2017 lower court decision about the seal's cross. The 75-year-old seal in question for Pennsylvania's Lehigh County features a yellow cross in its center behind a courthouse. The court's decision said the seal fits comfortably within a long tradition of state and municipal seals and flags throughout a republic that includes religious symbols or mottos, which further confirms its constitutionality. It also said the seal, with all of its symbols, has historical significance. Pope Francis approved new statutes for the Institute for the Works of Religion, often referred to as the Vatican Bank, that includes structural changes and a mandatory external audit. The renewed statutes, which were approved by the Pope on a trial basis for 2 years, were published by the Vatican Press Office August 10th. In a document signed by the Pope August 8th, the Pope emphasized the changes were to reinforce the Vatican Bank's intended mission to manage assets for the works of religion or charity. The Rosary Walk at a new shrine to be built in the Gallup Diocese to honor St. Kateri Tekakwitha will imitate the life and example of the Native American saint, popularly known as the Lily of the Mohawks. The shrine is being built through a new partnership of the diocese, the Knights of Columbus, and the Southwest Indian Foundation. With all the news a Catholic can use, I'm Renee Kranz with the Bishop's Bulletin.
Yeah, I still remember a few years ago when she was finally canonized, what joy that brought to the community. And I think an awareness in the broader community about a woman that people didn't know enough about.
Yes, for sure. We'll talk more about her.
Yeah, in the future, we will. Thanks for the news, Renee. Let's move on to our interview. This morning on Catholic Views, we are joined by Monsignor Charles Mangan. And Monsignor recently pointed out that we have an incredible number of people who are on the path to canonization, and so many with United States connections, and it's such an interesting list to look at. We thought we would maybe take a look at a few of those this morning on this program. So, Monsignor, welcome.
Thanks very much, Jerry, for the invitation.
I was so impressed with this list that you put together because I knew there were a number of them, but I had no idea there were this many.
Actually, Jerry, I have to confess, neither did I. I knew, I would say, most of them, but when I started counting up those who are blessed, so they've been beatified, mm-hmm. those who are venerable, which means that their vow, virtues have been considered heroic by the Pope, and then those whose causes have been introduced and approved by the local bishop, we're looking at least at 25 in the United States. So I think it's fantastic.
It is. And you know, and maybe we ought to say a word about why that's fantastic before we talk about some of these individuals.
Yes.
And I think I know the answer, but I want to hear what you think.
Well, it really reminds me that in our time in which we live, 21st century now, holiness is still very much part of the fabric. We do so much think about the unholiness, the evil, the disappointments, the discouragements, and there's surely plenty of those. But what about the way the Lord continues to raise people up, men and women, boys and girls?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is just another testimony to the goodness of God in raising people up who can be for us models, exemplars, examples, if you will, a kind of template for our own sometimes poor efforts at becoming holy.
And I think one of the things that people will discover if they take a look at a list like this or even look at some of the individuals on this list is that many of these people are not very different than you and I.
No.
They started in the same way that you and I did, and the circumstances of their life were, you know, were their own, but it's what they did with them.
That's right. That's right. And I think, too, as we go through various men and women here listed, some were very well-educated, some were not. Some were priests and religious, some were laypersons.
Mm-hmm.
It just shows there's a great kaleidoscope, a great variety and colors when it comes to holiness. And it's just a testament to what God continues to do.
And we're not talking about those that are already declared saints.
That's right.
We're not talking about those who maybe in our lives we have encountered who we believe, you know, are likely to be in heaven with God. We're not talking about them. Yes. These are some that are on the path to possible canonization.
That's right. Whether they'll be ever be beatified or canonized, hard to say, but at least they've been proposed as patterns of holiness, as good examples for us.
I wanted to, I don't know that we're even going to name all 25, and I don't know if there's a resource, Monsignor, that you might point to for people who, you know, might want to look at all 25 of
yes.
these.
I didn't see any particular list altogether. I kind of took it from various sources. If somebody would like to have this list, please feel free to write to me,
okay,
and I'll be happy to send it.
Monsignor Charles Mangan and Chancery here in Sioux Falls will be that's a great offer.
Be happy to do that.
Appreciate you doing that. But there are some in particular on this list that I do want to spend some time talking about. And the first one has such a South Dakota connection that I just feel we got to start there, and that's Black Elk.
Yes.
You know, this is a name that people have heard, you know, about. Certainly, he is certainly in the Native community. He is quite well known. Some might have heard recently that the old the mountain previously called Harney Peak is now called Black Elk
yes.
Peak. So the name is sort of out there. They might have even heard about the book Black Elk Speaks or something like that.
Yes.
But what people don't know, I think, much about is his deep faith, his life as a catechist, trying to bring others to the faith. And that's, of course, why he is now on the path towards canonization.
So true. Born in Montana, a second cousin of Crazy Horses,
mm-hmm.
And a convert to the church. And now, as you also said, a catechist. Maybe catechist sounds rather highfalutin, but really it's someone who teaches the faith.
Yeah.
A religious educator. And, of course, parents do that to their children. Priests and deacons do that in their homilies. Spouses do it to each other. And then we have a core of people who are willing to give of their time at our parishes to teach the faith, and our Catholic school teachers. So somebody who, as you said, Black Elk, who really took the faith seriously and wanted to share it.
Mm-hmm. And he did this a considerable amount of this in the Diocese of Rapid City, some of it in the Diocese of Sioux Falls even. And so there is a deep connection to him.
There is. And, you know, it's so exciting to have somebody like this who was in our state and lived in our state.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, too, of St. Catherine Drexel, who had sisters here in the state and who actually visited South Dakota. Of course, she's a canonized saint by now, and we have St. Catherine Drexel Parish in Sioux Falls. But it really brings us home when we are able to point to people who've lived here, who've been part of here, who have some connection with us.
And, of course, it was the Diocese of Rapid City that initiated this this process and now has, I believe, completed their portion and forwarded it to the Vatican?
Yeah, yes, and I believe that what also was very interesting here is that the American bishops also weighed in
right.
with a kind of vote saying that, yes, let us go forward with this. So it's very exciting, and I think having Black Elk and thinking about Black Elk is really a tremendous blessing and a reminder that, once again, that holiness is part and part of our fabric.
Yeah, absolutely so. There are some others with particular connections in some in roundabout ways. I want to talk a little bit about Catherine de Hewick Doherty, and I know this is probably one that you really appreciate too, because she had actually a pretty close relationship with our Bishop Paul Dudley.
She really did. Catherine de Hewick Doherty was born in Russia and founded Madonna House, which is a house in Ontario, Canada, really a spiritual house, a house of meditation and solitude. Bishop Dudley would go there and visit the house, mm-hmm. and he knew Catherine. And I think it's just a tremendous thing. Also, interestingly, she's related to the Hewick family, which comes from Aberdeen. So it's a marvelous connection.
Yeah, and so I'm sure growing up at Aberdeen yourself, you knew some of those family members.
I did.
Yeah.
I surely do. Knew the Hewicks, and to think that there is that connection, their family is such a blessing.
She'd be one worth looking up, I think, if people wanted to know a little bit more about her, because you'd actually find, I think, considerable information.
Yes, you would.
Because of Madonna House.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, there is a lot of information on the internet about Catherine DeHuick Doherty.
Yeah, yeah, beautiful. There's a couple of neighbors that I wanted to mention, and certainly a names that people will recognize. Monsignor Edward Flanagan from Boys Town in Omaha. I didn't know about him. That was one I did not know about.
Yes, his cause has been introduced. As you said, Jerry, he was born in Ireland, came to the United States, and founded Boys Town there in the Archdiocese of Omaha. Very concerned about boys who were in a kind of danger to their morals,
mm-hmm.
And many of whom struggled with families, their own families, and sometimes were sent as a kind of remedial measure. Monsignor Flanagan is well known. There was a famous Hollywood movie about Boys Town. And so a person who has attracted a lot of attention.
Yeah. And obviously did a lot of good.
A lot of good work and really inspired so many people.
I'm going to mention one that I actually had the privilege to meet one time, and that's Sister Thea Bowman. I don't know if you know much about her, Monsignor, but she was an African-American woman. She was a religious sister, convert, and she was a tremendous speaker. I think of her as an evangelizer is the way I think of her. Mm-hmm. And I encountered her at a media conference one time for those that work in Catholic media. She was one of our speakers. And just a powerful presence that she had. I'm not surprised to see her on this list now because she had that kind of, in a sense, aura about her.
Yes. I never met Sister Thea Bowman, but as you say, she was very much remembered for her ability to communicate the gospel. And to think of somebody who was an African-American, who was a convert, who was a Methodist, joined the church, is truly a blessing. Because as we know, many of the African-American peoples in the United States are not Catholics. I think about 12% are Catholics. It's a tremendous thing for us to think that this woman came from that community and became, as you said, a certain presence for so many.
Yeah. So we'll see. These that we've mentioned now have all been servants of God. So they are, in a sense, in the early stages of this process.
That's right. That's correct. And so as the process goes on, their lives are examined. The large compilation of papers and documents are sent to Rome. And then from there, the Holy Father would decide with the help of his collaborators whether it seems as though a person displayed heroic virtue.
Mm-hmm.
And if a person displayed heroic virtue throughout his or her life, that person then can be named venerable. Once a person is venerable, then there is the possibility of looking at a miracle that may have been done through that person's intercession. And if that happens, then the Holy Father would recognize the miracle, and then the beatification can proceed.
Right.
And then finally, that's repeated before canonization. So generally, there are two miracles required for canonization. Now, in the case of St. John the 23rd, Pope Francis decided to dispense with the second miracle. And I think that had to do with the fact that he was already very well known,
mm-hmm.
and people prayed through his intercession. And so the Holy Father, as the supreme legislator of the church, is able to dispense with some of these requirements.
I wondered if you might say a word about, and we've talked about this, at least in the program, we've talked about it different times with different people, the sense of the communion of saints, how we are all part of that communion, whether we are on this side of eternity or the other. And there's such beauty in that in terms of how we can support each other.
There really is. And it really, Jerry, comes down to our baptism, our common baptism. As St. Paul said, one faith, one Lord, one baptism. And so we have been baptized into the church, baptized into the family of God, into the body of Christ. And we often talk about the church having these three components. The church militant would be the church here on earth. Mm-hmm. In a sense, we're fighting and battling to go to heaven. Then we have the church suffering, which would be those who died in God's friendship, but who are in purgatory and who are still waiting to be admitted to heaven. And finally, the church victorious or the church triumphant would be those who have cooperated fully with God and who are now in the splendor of heaven. But the fact of the matter is that those in heaven are concerned about us and about those in purgatory. We are concerned about those in purgatory. Those in purgatory are concerned about us, too. So this is all, we're in this together.
Yeah.
We're really in this together.
That's what I love.
I do, too.
I just think that's so powerful. And why these examples can be so meaningful to us.
Yes, absolutely. It reminds us that this is not a journey that we take alone.
Yeah.
We take this with others.
Absolutely.
And that, I think, is very powerful.
I want to talk about a couple of the those that are on the venerable list now, and these are probably very recognizable to people, maybe not directly because of their South Dakota connections, but because of their either their media or their just their public person, if you will. And that's Father Patrick Peyton, who was certainly well known because of the Rosary Crusades that he promoted, and Archbishop Fulton Sheen, of course, who is also very well known because of all his teaching, and particularly, his television program. And that both of them are on the list is fascinating to me.
It really is. They lived at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Father Peyton, born in Ireland, lived in the United States, promoted the Holy Rosary, the recitation of the Rosary. He's remembered for the phrase, "The family that prays together stays together." And he was also a confidant of many in Hollywood. Many of those who make movies, actors and actresses, would turn to him for spiritual direction.
I did not know that.
Yes. And he was a man who would go all directions. He wasn't just concerned about, you know, the famous, although he knew many of the famous people. He was concerned about the rest of us, too.
Yeah.
And those of us who are struggling. I remember he came to South Dakota in the 1950s with the Rosary Crusade. I know my mother saw him in Aberdeen. He also appeared here in Sioux Falls. He went around the state. And so a tremendous thing.
Now, this is not an apt comparison, but yet I think maybe it is. He was sort of the Catholic Billy Graham.
Yeah, in many ways.
With the rosary.
Yes, in
many
ways.
Doing crusades like that.
And he was all around the world,
yeah.
And incredible things happen in his presence. As you said, Archbishop Sheen was born in Illinois, attended St. Paul Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota, well known for his books, radio, and television appearances, encouraged priests to make the daily holy hour before the Blessed Sacrament, a time of prayer every day. He was from Peoria, and we have been told that it may be before the end of the year that his beatification mass will be in Peoria. So it sounds like it's forthcoming.
Things are moving forward for him.
Yes.
Again, such a powerful witness to the faith, and I think the word evangelizer is again what I think of when I think of him. He was just fearless in preaching the gospel.
He was. He in season and out of season. One thing, Jerry, I would say, we talked about Bishop Dudley earlier. Bishop Paul Dudley mentioned once the story of when he invited Bishop Sheen to his parish in Minneapolis. And Bishop Sheen came and said to Bishop Dudley, "Father," he said, "I ask only for one thing, is that sometime during the day you allow me to have 1 hour where I could spend in front of the Blessed Sacrament."
Wow.
I mean, he was a servant. He was willing to preach, to teach, to spend of himself at this parish. He just asked for 1 hour.
He needed that.
Yes.
That was his fuel. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So, gosh, the time is going so fast, and I knew it would. I knew it would. But I do want to talk about a couple of those that are on the blessed list, because they're the closest now to moving to the full canonization. And the first one that you have on the list is really a favorite of mine, too. It's Father Solanus Casey.
Yes.
He was such a humble servant. And I think when I think about what a saint is, I think of him.
Yes. Humble, kind, born in Wisconsin, was a Franciscan Capuchin, a priest simplex. In those days, priests did not always have the faculty to hear confessions. So he was not granted by his superior that faculty, the privilege to hear confessions. Instead of becoming upset or resentful, he did other things.
Right.
He provided spiritual direction for those who would come. They would come to the door and ask him for prayers. And many would come back later and say, "Oh, Father, that terrible case I presented to you, it was impossible. It's all resolved."
Yeah. Yeah, miracle after miracle for
very
him.
Very much
so. I mean,
so.
While he was alive.
Yes.
Wonderful stories of his influence on people.
Something like St. André in Montreal.
Yeah.
St. André, who...
Bessette.
Yeah. Right, who was the a miracle worker of Montreal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I do want to mention Father Stanley Rother, who was a neighbor, if you will. He's from Oklahoma and died as a missionary. In a sense, a martyr's death, I think, huh?
Yes, yes. Born in Oklahoma, attended Mount St. Mary's Seminary in Emmitsburg. Diocesan priest who had a mission in Guatemala, was martyred there during terrible unrest, political unrest, known to be so close to his people, whom they loved him to death.
Yeah.
And he served them to death, and he gave of himself some completely to death.
Yeah, literally.
Literally. He was beatified here in the United States now, I believe it was it last fall? And so we hope that someday he'll also be canonized.
Yeah.
Just a
marvelous example of a rather ordinary. I mean, I don't think there was extraordinariness that people would say about him as a priest. He was a good priest.
Yes, very good.
But he just did his work. He just did his ministry and just loved his people.
He loved his people and was so close to them and knew their sufferings in this terrible political turmoil that they lived under.
Well, we've scratched the surface, and that's about it. But again, I want to repeat your offer. If folks would like to see this entire list, and then most of these names, you can find stuff online.
You really can. There's a few. There's not much, but I would say the vast majority have quite a bit of information.
So there's hope for all of us to be saints. It's what we ought to strive for. And Monsignor, thanks for sharing with us this morning.
You're welcome, Jerry.
Renee, I want to go back to a story you had in your news this morning, and that is about the Taste of the Goodness event, which is coming up next weekend, next Saturday,
right,
in Sioux Falls. It really sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
It does. There will be lots of food and fun, and you can even win some stuff, it sounds like.
Yeah, there's a silent auction. There's a part of it as well. Mm-hmm. If you want more information about it, you can go to bdhh.org. That's the Bishop Dudley Hospitality House, bdhh.org. You can volunteer. You can get tickets. Mm-hmm. And you can learn about the Dudley House, which is the beneficiary. That's the
best.
Yes,
for sure.
Absolutely. All right, that's our time for Catholic Views this morning. We'll be back next Sunday.